it was start out with doing, three frustrations. Now, a lot of you been doing discovering Buddhism for a while, and some of you, who are the new people here tonight? One, two. Were you here last week? No? Bless your heart. You were here last week. No? Holy moly. Well, welcome. Is this your first time at the Kadampa Center too?
No. I've been coming often, but...
You?
No.
First time here or no?
No. I took the intro to meditation and intro to Buddhism.
Okay. And you?
First time.
First time. Do you know much about Buddhism at all? Or?
A little bit.
Okay. That's all you need to know. Well... Really? Well, that's all I know. So, hey, we're on the same boat. Anyway, so we start out. I'll give you a little... I always like to remind myself that these three prostrations that we're doing, it's an Asian tradition, and to pay homage, to pay respect, and all of that. And, you know, Japanese still do it. But it's... one time, you know, the Western students were trying to talk Lama Yeshe out of doing prostrations. They were saying, listen, this is an Asian thing. Let's modernize Buddhism. And he said, you know, sometimes it's just good to put your head on the ground. Just ground your head. You know, just do it. And see what happens. See how it affects your mind. And we said, we there are a lot of different things you can think about. But as you do the prostrations, and just watch. If you don't want to do it, just watch. But just think... you know that we're purifying our body, speech, and mind, and that it is a great antidote to arrogance and pride, which is a huge obstacle to learning. So that I always found that most helpful, because that's the reason I didn't want to do prostrations, because I was arrogant, and I'm still arrogant. But prostrations are an antidote to that attitude of mind, which is such a big obstacle to learning. All right, so we'll do three prostrations. Those of you who know the multiplying mantra, we can do that together too. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo tamasriye, soham. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo tamasriye, soham. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo uttamasriye soha. So let's find the prayers. Anybody help me here? Our introductory prayers.
34.
Okay. Now, who are we praying to, by the way? Anybody help me here? Since Buddhism is non-theistic, you know, we're not asking. You may not have known that, by the way, but it's non-theistic. Some people don't know that. You know, Buddhism doesn't really talk about a supreme being, like a personal God that you can supplicate and ask to save you or protect you. You can ask the Buddhas to do that, by the way, enlightened beings. We can ask for help outside ourselves. But the notion of a supreme being, an all-powerful, omniscient, omnipresent, what else? Omnipotent. That's really not part of the Buddhist worldview. So these prayers seem like, well, who, you know, I mean, as as a Presbyterian growing up, you know, I thought, well, who are we? And getting introduced to Buddhism, I kept trying to find, where's God, and who are we praying to? And anybody got some more experienced DB students who want to comment on that, or what do you think? I need some help here. Yeah.
I think you're praying or making an aspiration to your own enlightened consciousness, since we all have Buddha nature and we all have that pure consciousness that's beyond conceptual thinking, that we're somehow recognizing or praying to that pure consciousness that's within us and within all beings.
Mm-hmm. Now you have the mic, you get to talk too. You got any thoughts about that?
It's similar to that, but just putting out good intentions.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of it. Anybody else? Robbie, I want to hear your two cents on that.
Well, he used the word aspiration, which is the one Geshe-la always used. He says a prayer is an aspiration. I think it's first acknowledging that each of us, no matter how messed up and we seem to be right now, has the potential to become these things. And it's a way of getting in touch, reminding ourselves that that potential exists in each of us. I mean, so often they use the words may. May mm-hmm. I do this? May other people do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is just, I hope, it's more than I hope,
right.
But it's an aspiration.
Yeah.
This is the way things, it would be better if things were like this.
And you know, there's a lot, and there's so many, they're formalized prayers. I mean, there's page after page after page of prayer. Just to add to this, I remember one time I asked Thubten Pende this about prayer. You know, when may all beings be happy. You know, if I'm sick, you know, may I be well, like that. But it's kind of like these are, a lot of them are supplications or aspirations. But if it changes my mind, what does it do? It changes my world, doesn't it? I mean, it completely changes my world. So if I pray, you know, to get enlightened or to be happier or more compassionate or kinder or whatever, that's my aspiration. And then through working on my own mind and, you know, from a Buddhist perspective, you know, if I change my mind, it changes my world. I mean, the way I see the world can go from black to white. It completely depends our view of ourself and the world completely depends upon the mind. It's not to say that there's not something, that this is not, you know, iced tea here, but or there isn't something here, but my mind is creating everything for me. Your mind is creating your world. Your mind is creating, we're all creating our own experience of ourselves and the world. So changing our mind is a big part of it. And then we have, and this is, you know, I've had this conversation with Robbie a few times. It's like, when you get enlightened, what's the point of being a Buddha? It's like, may I get enlightened in order to benefit all sentient beings, right? Well, it sounds like a Buddha can help, doesn't it? A Buddha can benefit everyone who's open to the benefit of a Buddha. So an enlightened being can benefit us if we have the karmic opening, if we've created the karma to be benefited by the enlightening inspiration, the inspiration of an enlightened being, we will be benefited by that. If we don't have the karma, we won't. But it is, that's you know, in Buddhism, it almost sounds like, oh, we're just here alone. But, you know, there's a little, I read this little piece from Holly Ansett, who's one of Lama Zopa's attendants, and it was like, or maybe it was Venerable Roger. He said, Buddhas are everywhere, and they want to help us. They can help us. They can inspire us. They can make a difference. And so there is a sense of, in Buddhism, even though we talk about non-theistic, you know, there's supposed to be countless Buddhas in this room right now that we can't see. You know, we don't see them, so we don't believe in them. But if we're open to their enlightening influence, we can benefit from them. And this is one of the whole points of Tantra, is, for example, we can't see, you know, we talk about Tenrezig or Avalokitesvara, the thousand-armed Buddha over here in the corner, the manifestation of compassion, all the Buddha's compassion. Well, compassion, what is, you know, it's hard to work with the word compassion, isn't it? Even the notion compassion is hard to work with, hard to develop. But Avalokitesvara, and this is in a particular form, exists. This is what, you know, what the Buddhists would say, exists, but we can't see it. We can't see Chenrezig, this manifestation of compassion. So we visualize it. We create a visualization in our mind's eye of Chenrezig, and is one and the same with compassion. And then we can use our practices through mantras and visualizations to develop our own mind. It's very interesting. So there definitely is a sense that there is something outside us that can benefit us if we're open to it. The prayers are aspirational, but if we change our mind, it changes our world, right? And there was one other point. I think that's probably enough. I know what it was. So back in the old, back when I was just getting introduced to Buddhism, this was back in like 1980. There was a lot of people in Bodh Gaya, India, and we were walking around the big stupa there in Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha got enlightened, the Bodhi tree, and everybody was like doing mantras and all this kind of stuff and reciting these prayers. And Lama Yeshe said, "Wait a minute, are your prayers touching your heart?" No, they're just parroting prayers. He said, pray, you know, make it personal. I mean, pray that you can be able to help others. Pray for your own happiness and to heal your own angst and negative karma. And pray for your family and pray. I remember after I heard that, my brother was having issues with infertility, and I started praying for him, and I don't know if it made a difference, but they got pregnant the next year. But I started praying for, you know, prayer, making it personal prayer, not just parroting prayers. So I think that's another place in Buddhism where I think we're missing out. I mean, what about getting on your knees? I know when I was a kid, we used to get by the bed and get on our knees and pray. You know, my mom and dad and our friends and aunts and uncles, and be happy and not be sick, and the people, you know, like that. It's okay to make our prayers personal, not just, automatic, on automatic pilot. I think that really, you know, when we can feel our heart moved by the prayers, that's really, really cool. And honestly, Lama Yeshe is like one of the few people I've ever heard bring that up. I mean, I haven't heard Geshe-la talk about it. I think I'd like to catch him in here on a Sunday morning in front of a bunch of people and ask him, see what he says. I think he'd have a good answer. I think he'd say it's perfectly okay. It's really good to have your prayers be more than just the standard ones that we've, you know, that, I mean, these have all been passed down, and these are, you know, the words are blessed, and they all have meaning. All these prayers have meaning. So some of you who are new here and you don't understand what these mean, it's only a matter of time and effort. If you want to know what they mean, there are people that can teach you what they mean. And they're rich with meaning. They're rich with meaning. These are not empty words. Every one of these prayers has profound implications on the development of our mind if we understand the meaning and put it into practice. So let's do, we'll do refuge and generating bodhicitta, four measurables, seven limb, and then we'll do the mandala offering. That'll be a good start. We'll do it all in English, of course. Okay. And sometimes it's good. I know Geshe-la doesn't do this, but I know Lama Zopa does this a lot. You know, we, almost every tradition, people put their hands together. And I think it helps come from the heart when you speak, but there are other reasons for it too. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Kamne Yatayami. And then when we finish, we'll go. What page are the closing prayers on, so people... Anyway, it's like...
244.
Yeah, 244. But that's not the one I'm looking for. It's maybe just right before that or after that. Anyway, all right. It's on 246, yeah. Okay. I want to go over some logistical things here. Make sure I don't make any racket. So this is, you see people with different kinds of malas. You think, usually malas are associated with mantra recitation. And over the years, if you hang around Buddha Dharma enough, you'll buy a bunch of malas, more than you need. I think I might have, I don't know. Anyway, this one's a crystal rosary, and the, you know, this one particularly is associated with Chenrezig, the Buddha of compassion. This is a crystal one. Now this one's made out of what?
Is it the crystal that makes it associated?
I don't know exactly why, but you always see Chenrezig holding a crystal rosary in the images. So, I mean, I just think it's you know, it's just part of the tradition now. You know, if you're doing a Chenrezig retreat and you can get your hands on a crystal rosary, it's just nicer. There's a lot of things like this that are inexplicable. But this one is... it's not a Bodhi seed. It's not a sesame seed. I'm not sure what it is. It's some kind of seed. What is it?
Lotus.
Lotus seed. That's it. It's a lotus seed. So this one's another one. And then I actually have one that I've had from the beginning of beginningless time for myself anyway. I'm not supposed to show this, but I will anyway. This is a Bodhi seed mala. Now this is, you see a lot of people with these. And you know, if you go to a place where people are doing a lot of practices and stuff, you know, you'll see people walking around with malas. But generally speaking, you know, it's probably, you know, better not to, you know, wear around your neck and make a big deal out of it. You know, kind of tantra is like one of those things. They you know, we call it secret mantra because it really is kind of meant to be personal practice, not one that you make a big show of. So like that. So malas are helpful when you're counting mantras, because many practices you may be, like, for example, if you decide to do Vajrasattva practice, which is what we're going to go over in a little bit tonight, last summer, you know, at least one or two people that are here were in that retreat, and we, some people have committed to do 100,000 of these, the 100-syllable mantra. So, you know, you know, normally you would count that with your rosary, and after you get to 110 beads, you make a note. But you can only count 100 of them. You have to throw 10 of them away because you probably were distracted. But anyway, 100,000 is a tradition of doing 100,000 mantras of many different deities to. And the practices can take weeks and weeks. You might do four sessions a day that might last anywhere from, you know, from 1.5 to 3 hours, depending on how much time and energy you want to put into it. You would do four sessions a day, one before the sun came up, one in the morning, one after lunch in the afternoon, and one in the evening. So you do four sessions like that, and then accumulate the number of mantras that you would need to do. So that doing 100,000 Vajrasattva mantras back in the early days when of the introduction of Tibetan Buddhism to the Westerners, that was like probably the most common practice that our teachers, Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa, would give their Western students to do, because it's a powerful purification practice. So let's take a couple of minutes just to chill. And, you know, we didn't do any meditation last time. So this time, let's just use our, just sit up straight and be, and I'm going to lead us in a little bit of a guided meditation of the three principles of the path. It won't go on too long, but we'll start out with maybe 5 minutes of being mindful of the breathing. And you can either focus on the sensation of the breath as it leaves your nostril, as you breathe out and in, or you can focus on the rising and falling of your abdomen. Sometimes it's even helpful to put your hand over your abdomen if you have trouble. Or you can just do, I know Geshe-la teaches a 9-round breathing. You can just do that over and over and over again. But the point is, we want to bring the mind to one point and not have it be scattered and have it be peaceful. And so those of you that are new to meditation, you know, there are two aspects of our mind that we need to meditate well if we're trying to focus our mind on anything. And the first is mindfulness, which in this sense is like recollecting the object of meditation. And sometimes it's even defined as memory, but just remembering that your contract that with yourself is to keep your full attention on the totality of the experience of breathing. You know, wherever you choose to focus on the breath, you're going to use the mental factor called mindfulness, and then there's another mental factor called alertness, introspective alertness, which is like having a little spy in your mind. It's just that's paying attention to distractions, and when the mind is beginning to like start going off in another direction, through alertness, through this introspective alertness, you go whoop, you know, you bring the mind back. You don't let the mind go off on a tangent. You recollect what you're focused on. You go back to the breath. So you do that. Sometimes you might have to do it 100 times in 10 minutes. Sometimes maybe 100 times in an hour, depending on how skilled you are and how lucky you are. Now, I'm going to keep focusing on the breath, but we're going to do another kind of meditation, with a few breaths. It's called vase breathing. And what you're going to do is when I instruct you to, you're going to take a little bit deeper breath than normal. And you're going to, as the breath goes down, as the air goes down your nostrils, you're going to swallow, and you're going to feel the diaphragm pushing down, and you're going to tighten the muscles of the pelvic floor just a little bit. So you don't want to be too aggressive here, but you're gently pushing down on the diaphragm and bringing the muscles of the pelvic floor up, you know, kind of like what they call Kegel exercises. Similar, and you want to create a little compression, kind of like the shape of a vase, right here in your midsection. And you want to hold your breath and just notice. You may experience a little bit of blissful energy, you may not, but just notice what you experience. And then when you're ready, you'll exhale, and you'll do that again. We'll do that again for, you know, you go at your own pace, like for 3 or 4 breaths we'll do that. So, we'll take a deep breath, a deeper than normal breath through your nose, and then swallow as the air goes down, and hold your breath, pull the muscles of the pelvic floor up. And while you're holding your breath, create a little like package of energy in your midsection. Exhale and relax the muscles of the pelvic floor, and take another couple of normal breaths, and then do that again. You probably will notice that when you do this, your mind comes to one point very quickly. Particularly if there's any blissful energy that you're generating, your mind is not easily distractible at that moment. Honing your breath while you're doing this pause breathing. You're not inhaling and exhaling as you create this compression. So we'll do it again. Just notice where your mind is now compared to when we started this practice. So to be a suitable vessel to even hear the teachings on Tantra, you know, it's said that you should have some understanding of the three principles of the path, and to really practice it, Tantra, you not only have to be a committed Buddhist practitioner, but you have to have faith in the Tantric path. You have to have a proper empowerment from a qualified teacher. And the most important, I mean, all of these are important, and they're vows to be kept and so forth, but I mean, the real foundation for these practices are the three principles of the path that we've been, you know, and repetition's not a bad thing. You know, we need to go over this again and again and again. You know, we talked about renunciation, which sometimes translated as the determination to be free. And, you know, if you don't have, well, renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness. So those are the three principles of the path that we have to have some understanding of, some taste of what these things mean, and then some aspiration to deepen our understanding. So renunciation is this determination to be free. Free of what? Free of suffering. Free of complications, as Geshe-la says. And of course, if you think your life is hunky-dory, and you don't have any problems, and well, you know, this is just how it is. But the claim, which is pretty amazing, is the Buddha claimed that the way we're living now is kind of pathetic. You know, it's like we think this is okay. We think that, you know, having good days and bad days and being stressed out and depressed sometimes and excitement, and which is not bad, but we're all over the place. We're all going to get sick, old, and die, and it's just going to be crazy. We think that's okay, that's normal, And the Buddha said, yes, the circumstances of life being up and down, they are normal. That's pretty normal. But the suffering, the mental suffering, is not necessary. He says, possible to be completely free of suffering, no matter what the circumstances are, whether you're healthy or whether you're sick, whether you're on vacation or whether you're on your deathbed, you know, whatever the circumstances are, it's possible to have a peaceful, happy mind. So, that's a big deal. I mean, the determination to be free of suffering implies that it's possible to be free, doesn't it? That's what it implies. And yet, if we haven't practiced, and we don't have a taste of the benefits of the Dharma, at this level, it's just words. It's just empty words. But with practice, we can begin to see our minds settling down. We can catch ourselves before we get angry, or at least we don't stay angry as long. We find ourselves making better choices. When we make mistakes, we clean them up right away. This is all the practice of Dharma. This is how we work with our mind. So again, this renunciation is this determination to be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. Implicit in it is that it's possible. And then if we understand emptiness, if we understand the deeper teachings of the Buddha, we can understand, and karma, particularly the teachings on karma, we can understand it is possible. It's logically possible to stop suffering. It's just going to take a monumental effort. It will not happen without a huge committed effort over time. But what else is there to do? I mean, we either suffer or we try to stop our suffering. In Thailand, if you ever go to Thailand and hear Thai Buddhists teach, they say the Buddha taught two things, suffering and how to stop it. Suffering and how to stop it. That's called nirvana, and it's when we stop our suffering. So wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great to be able to stop our suffering? And we talk about this in a lot of ways. We talk about it as having compassion for ourselves. Like we recognize that we're suffering. And this is not easy for us to do. We think that this is normal. This is just how it is. You can't do anything about it. We're stuck with it. And the Buddha's saying, no, we're not. And so having enough empathy or compassion for ourselves, wishing ourselves to be free of suffering and its causes, is in essence what renunciation is. It's determination to be free. Have enough compassion for yourself to choose to be free, to want to be free, to determine to be free. How? Through the practice of Buddha Dharma. Through the practice of the three higher trainings of concentration, ethics, concentration, and wisdom. That's how we stop our suffering. You know, very important teachings. This whole notion of renunciation, very, you know, it's like, you know, if we got that in this lifetime, it'd be huge. Bodhicitta's the next step, but renunciation is the very first step, and it's most of us are light years away from that one. but it's so important because it provides all the energy for spiritual practice. Because we want to be free. We have the energy to be free. Then the second principle of the path that we need to have in our heart mind to practice Tantra is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening. Citta means mind. The awakening mind. The heart of enlightenment. The altruistic intention to become enlightened, motivated by love and compassion. Different ways of talking about the same thing, but it's motivated by genuine love and compassion for all living beings, universal living beings, excluding not one. Your worst enemy, your ex-spouse, you know, the person that's, you know, stealing from you or cheating on you or whatever. There's nobody excluded. That, you know, ISIS and Donald Trump and everybody's part of this. We have to get enlightened for all living beings, excluding none. And so one of the ways to quickly kind of connect with feeling close to everyone, every living being, including not just from the human realm, but all the different realms of existence. But the only ones we can see are the animal realm and the human realm. But there are other realms of existence that we talk about in Buddhism also. But we just work with the ones we see. We are dedicating our quest for enlightenment in order to be able to perfectly guide and serve others. And one of the ways to connect with others is to realize that we're all the same. You know, even like the little insects that we quickly smash, you know, or kill when they get in our way or annoy us. The cockroaches, all of that stuff, mosquitoes, and on, up to, you know, pest rats and you name it. All the living beings in the world, they're just like me. How? They want to be happy and they don't want to suffer. There's no living being that's capable of feeling that doesn't want to feel good and does not want to avoid the feelings of pain and suffering. So we all, you know, Jeffrey Hopkins said this one time. He said, we know something very intimate about every one of us. Each of us is very intimate. We all want exactly the same thing. We want happiness and we don't want to suffer. So tomorrow at work, look into the person's eyes that you're talking to and think, I know what makes you tick. Everything you do 24/7 is for one purpose, to avoid suffering and find happiness. We're all exactly the same in wanting that. And so, bodhicitta, this awakening mind, which is the heart of the Mahayana practice, is so important in Tibetan Buddhism, in the Mahayana, the universal vehicle. It's that we want to help others. We want, because we feel connected to them, we feel love and compassion for them. We see that they're suffering. We see that we're all interconnected and we want the same thing. We want to be happy and we don't want to suffer. And so we want to stop their suffering and help them find happiness. How do we do that? How can I do that? I've got to get my act together. I've got to eliminate my stupidity, my faults, my narrow-mindedness, my negativities, my harmful, destructive states of mind, my impulse to make bad choices. We need to work at that level, and we need to eliminate those through the practice of ethics, and then we need to train ourselves to make good choices, to develop compassion, loving kindness, power, skillful means. That means knowing exactly what to do and say in every conceivable situation to benefit the people and the beings that are there that you're dealing with. That's what a Buddha can do. So that's what we aim to. We aim to become a Buddha in order to help others. How wonderful that would be. How wonderful. And the byproduct of that is all of the things you ever wanted for yourself are taken care of. Your happiness is the byproduct of this. In fact, it's not just happiness, it's blissful happiness beyond our wildest imagination. We can't even imagine the bliss and the joy of an enlightened being. We cannot imagine it. And that's, so we aim for that experience of full enlightenment so we can help others. That's bodhicitta. That's the awakening mind. That is absolutely necessary to make tantric practice work. Otherwise, we're kidding ourselves. And then the last point is emptiness. The wisdom of emptiness. The wisdom of emptiness. What is that? What is emptiness? What is wisdom? In a very real sense, we understand that our mind creates our world. We don't all see things the same way. We have our own unique take on reality, which proves that there's no absolute reality. Otherwise, we'd see it all the same. So we say that our experience, the world, who we even perceive ourselves as being, is empty of this absolute reality. There's no absolute reality that exists one way. We all see the world differently. It proves that our mind is creating a reality. We're all seeing it differently. So how does it exist? And this sounds weird, but it's like stripping away our projection. If we could do this, if we could strip away, Lama Yeshe used to call it, like glorifying paint stripping job, strip off the paint off that car, off that house. If we could strip away all the colors and all the textures and see things just as they are, if we could see them empty of our projection, that's how things exist. But we think that things exist the way we see them. Our ego tells us, this is who I am, this is how it is. And even that projection of a false sense of self that we hold on to and cling to so dearly, is a complete fantasy. Of course, you exist and I exist, but not the way our mind perceives us. We inflate it. We blow it up. And then we have this inflated sense of self. And if you ask yourself, you think, if you ask yourself, do you think you're ever going to die? Intellectually, you'd say, yeah. But in your heart of hearts, no, I'll never die. We don't think we're going to die. And we think we're the center of the universe. We're the most important one. All of this is this projection of ignorance. Where do these projections come from? They come from our past actions, karma. Where does karma come from? It comes from ethics. It comes from good choices and bad choices. So the projector that's creating your experience and my experience of the world, the film in that projector is coming from former actions of virtue or non-virtue. And there's a screen, you know, that's just like, it's like a screen in front of us. We can think of it this way, and it's projecting our reality. Because there's no absolute reality independent of our mind creating it, is it? That projector depends upon our actions. It depends upon karma. It depends upon ethics. It depends upon kindness and compassion and love and being generous and being mean and selfish and hateful and harmful and killing and stealing and all of that creates a whole different world, doesn't it? The projector creates suffering for us when that's the action, and when those actions are ripening as new film for your projector, and as former actions are ripening of virtue, positive actions are ripening, we project a world of freedom and joy and peace and bliss, all because there's no absolute reality independent of our mind. The world, I guess is one way to say it, is empty of, a void of anything like that. It's void of any absolute reality that exists independent of my mind. Emptiness means that there is no reality that exists independent of my mind. It is empty of independent existence. There's no reality that exists independent of my mind. My mind is the source of everything. My happiness and my suffering depend on my mind, which depends on karma, which depends on ethics, or not being ethical. Either way, it gets fed into this karmic machinery that goes around, comes around, goes around, comes around. So we want to see ourselves as blissfully happy. We make good choices, and we purify our negative karma. If we want to suffer more and see ourselves in hell, literally, we just keep following the instincts of our ego. I'm the center of the universe. I'm the most important one. You know, you tick me off and I get angry, and if I see something desirable, I chase after it, and so on. It's so straightforward. It's so profound. The Buddha saw this under the Bodhi tree. He said, we can stop our suffering when we can see that it's completely created by our own mind. And the tap root is this ignorance called believing in your projections. Seeing them and believing them. The that is a complete mistake. Reality is a void or empty of any absolute self or other. Just something to think about. It's so important, though, because in Tantra, what's going to happen is we're going to notice that all we are is a body-mind. The ego, this inflated sense of self, we have to let it go. We can't practice Tantra projecting our ego as a deity. We have to allow the egocentric mind to disappear and then arise as a deity from the space of emptiness. So important to understand this. So these are the three principles. So, you know, if you're, you know, those of you who are new, this is really the heart of all of Buddhism from the Mahayana perspective. It's renunciation. It's determination to be free of suffering and its causes. Again, based on some realization that we are suffering and that it's possible to stop it. And that takes some practice and effort and study and experience to be able to say that and mean it. And then bodhicitta, this altruistic intention to become enlightened based on not on sentimentality but on genuine love and compassion. And then the wisdom of emptiness, of voidness. We have a minute for questions. No, I'm kidding. Any questions or about anything? I guess I have to give y'all something to talk about. But I'm not going to. No, truthfully, I mean, anything come up about anything I just said? Great. Yeah. I mean, it is the heart of the Buddha, you know, the heart of the teachings of Buddhism. You know, it's, if you can understand not just the words, but actually, you know, do some practice and get some feeling for the word, it's really inspiring. It can really make your practice meaningful. All right, so we've talked about Tantra. Now, we're going to do... actually, let's take a minute and stretch. And everybody get up and move around. And then we'll start back in about a minute or so. Thank you. Hello? Hello? It's working now. Yeah. Okay. So, so a big part of I like to tie emptiness into ethics, you know, and karma. Some years ago, we had a teaching on the marriage of karma and emptiness. Okay, yeah, and because you know I love the notion. I mean, it does make sense too, and you know I think when we start looking at it, yeah. Oh, you're just holding your hand up for the book. The marriage of karma and emptiness. It's really helpful to think this way, even though this is a little simplistic. It's like there's just an empty screen, right? It's just when we look out there, honestly, we're all having our different. We all have a different experience. Is that clear? I mean, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? We all have a different experience. We might think I know that. I'm speaking for myself. I'm arrogant enough to think, well, the way I see it is the way it is. But and we all have that experience. But there is no absolute. It's that way. It's our experience. It depends upon our mind projecting that. And again, it comes from our karma. It comes from the imprints that our mind created in the past based on actions of virtue and non-virtue. And so, because everything is empty and there's no absolute objective reality out there independent of my mind creating it, boy, wouldn't it? It's really smart to create the causes to see myself as happy and to purify the negative karmic causes that are going to cause me to suffer. Purification practice makes a whole lot of sense. And it's a great way for us to learn how our mind works, too, is do purification practice. So this is what Vajrasattva was about. And I said this last week. I'm going to write these things down. And what we're trying to do here is purify our negative karma. You don't want to purify your positive karma. Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense. So, in this life, we have the 10 non-virtuous actions. The 10, almost like the 10 commandments. I'm just going to put in non-virtues. Okay? 10 non-virtuous actions. Now, you might say, well, I've never done any of these, or I've only done one or two. But we're talking about not just this lifetime, but countless former lifetimes. So, again, those of you who've been around discovering Buddhism for a while, you know, we talk about past and future lifetimes, and there's no beginning to this mind. You know, the mind of this life was preceded by the mind of a former life, and then a former life, and a former life. It's like a timeline. If zero is now, there's no beginning. It doesn't make any sense. It's not logical that the consciousness, you know, at the first moment of this life was from a moment of a past life, and that sort of proves past lifetimes. So we, you know, again, if that's not working for you, creatively align with it is helpful because we've done all of these things countless times. Even though we're not, you know, we can say, well, I'm not as bad as those guys, as ISIS guys, or I'm not as bad as whoever the mean, you know, the meanest person you can imagine, Hitler. You know, we've been supposedly, and the teachings say, we made Hitler look like small potatoes. We have been way worse than Hitler in past lifetimes. We've done everything many, many, many times. So just go with that. And we have a lot of negativity to clean up. So the three of body are killing, and stealing, and adultery, which the simple way to define that is having sexual relations with somebody else's partner. Okay? Well, these are the body. So when we're doing Vajrasattva practice, it's good to try to be specific. If you can remember a time when you've done any of these things, bring it up and actually feel contrition about it. Feel some regret, sincere regret. And then, when we leave here today, go pick up the phone and apologize to somebody if you need to, really. We need to get up where we fell down. So if we make a mistake, if we've made mistakes, we need to not just do Vajrasattva, but actually take it to the next step and actually do something real. Alright? Then, there's a fourth speech. Lying. Everybody knows what that is. Deceiving others. Five. Slander. Anybody not know what slander means? The easy definition is bad mouthing. Turning someone else's mind against somebody else. Bad mouthing people. Harsh speech, which a lot of people find offensive, and then this is sometimes called one of my favorite pastimes, idle gossip, frivolous talk, just running on and on, saying nothing, wasting our precious life, right? So these are four of speech. If you've lied to somebody or you badmouth somebody and you can, I've got some friends in AA and they have this thing, I don't remember which step it was, but I can't think of the word they use, but it's like taking a rigorous inventory. What is it? Pardon? Yeah, being a ruthless, rigorous inventory of your actions, your whole life. And if you've harmed someone else, try to make it right. If it wouldn't create, even a bigger explosion, find those people and go talk to them and actually try to make it right again. Clean it up. That's a big part of cleaning up our karma. And then, let's see, eight. I'm not going to go into these because there's actually 84,000 mental delusions. But the main ones we pick on are greed, ill will, or hatred. Another way of saying it. Aversion, the mind of aversion, and ignorance. And there's a lot of... It's not just the ignorance that we talked about in emptiness. One of the big forms of ignorance that we talk about in Buddhism is that we don't think we have any ability to become, to really be truly happy. That's a form of ignorance. Not believing, not having faith in the laws of causality. So as we're doing Vajrasattva, try to remember these 10 non-virtuous actions, and if you can bring them to mind, because the first visualization, I'm going to go over this. We don't have a lot of time, but we'll by the way, who knows the tune to this? Joanne, are you good at it?
Not very.
Anybody? There's a tune to it which we can do, but anyway. The first visualization we're going to do is when we purify the body is we're going to imagine that Vajrasattva, and the best we can do for us, honestly, is just visualize that the deity, Vajrasattva, is above the crown of our head on a lotus and a moon disc, all made of light like a hologram, and there's Vajrasattva, father and mother, And at their heart is this disc, and around the edge of the disc is a 100-syllable mantra, and at the center, this is a lot to think about. So like I said, if you can just remember a light, you're doing good. And there's a hum there. And as we say the 100-syllable mantra, light and nectar come down from Vajrasattva and enter the crown of our head. And now the first thing we want to do is purify all of our physical negative karma. So it would be killing and stealing and adultery. Okay? And anything else that we've done that might be construed as physical negative karma. So we imagine that white light and nectar comes through us and goes right out the bottom part of our body and disappears into space. And we try to keep this visualization going of light and nectar entering the crown of our head and completely purifying our body. We're just doing body now. Then we'll do speech. And speech would be like, it's kind of like if, you know, this is tea, you know, but if this was like, I mean, if I put water in here and just kept pouring water in here, the tea would like overflow, wouldn't it? It's like that. So we imagine that that this light and nectar is going down, and all of our negative karma of speech is like garbage, you know, that's coming up, and as the water fills us up from below, this garbage floats up to the surface and comes out the orifices, our eye, our sockets, and our ears, and our nose, and our mouth, and again, we're purifying all the negative karma of speech. So light and nectar entering, filling us up from the bottom up, and then all this garbage just spilling out that symbolizes our lying and slander and harsh and frivolous speech. Okay, and then the last visualization is of the mind, purifying the mind. And this time, it's just like turning the light. If this room were completely dark and somebody flipped on the switch, it's like that. We imagine that our inside is completely darkened with the negative karma of all the greed and hatred and ignorance and pride and jealousy and fear and depression and all the negativities that we've ever had, mental negativities that we have. You know, it's like this darkness inside of us. And as soon as we do the mantra, this light and nectar enters the crown of our head, and it instantly disappears as we say the mantra. So we can do the mantra. We're going to do it 21 times. So I'm not going to, so we can finish close to time, I'm not going to go into the ritual that Lama Zopa did. You know, I can say a few words about it, but we'll do this next week. We'll do it really rigorously next time. But if you go to page 9, that's refuge in bodhicitta, which we've already done. And then Lama Zopa is talking about the four opponent powers to purify negative karma. So the first thing you have to have is regret. We have to sincerely regret what we've done, the negativities of body, speech, and mind. And then on page 11, he's reminding us to remember death can come at any moment. And we've got to purify this negative karma now. This is the time to do it is now. Because if we die with this negative, all these negative imprints, it's going to project us into a future, really kind of hellacious life. We don't want that. Life is precious. Could end any moment. Have to seize the moment and do the practice now. Then the next page is the power of dependence. So he's talking about bodhicitta, This is on page 12. And then the visualization that I just went over, which I'll do again. And then we'll do the Vajrasattva mantra. So if you can close your eyes while we're doing this and do the visualization, if you cannot remember the words of the mantra, and I think a lot of people here probably can't, just listen. Listen to the words of the mantra and try to do the visualization and try to feel that you're purifying your body first, your speech second, and your mind third. So close your eyes just a second. And imagine that above the crown of your head, seated on a lotus and a moon seat, is Vajrasattva, father and mother. Their bodies are white with one face and two arms. And Vajrasattva is inseparable from my main teacher, my root guru, and all the minds of the Buddha. And out of his unbearable compassion, which embraces me and all of the beings, he appears in this form to help purify me and all others. On a moon disc at Vajrasattva's heart stands a hum encircled by a garland of the 100-syllable mantra. A powerful stream of white nectar flows from the hum and the mantra garland, and I am cleansed of all sickness, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscurations. So, if you know this mantra, then we'll try to sing it. This is the best I can do with the tune. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dino me bawa Supto kayo me bawa Supo kayo me bawa Anarato me bawa Sarva siddhi me prayacha Sarva kama sujami Chidam sriyam kuruham Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Sarva tata gadra Padra mame mucha Padra bawa maha samaya Sapa ahum pe. Alright, now you're supposed to be doing the visualization of your body now. Remember that. The light and nectar come into the crown of your head as we say the mantra, these words of power, feel that you're purifying your body. We're going a little faster this time. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dino me bawa Suto kayo me bawa Supo kayo me bawa Anarata me bawa Sarva siddhi me prayacha Sokama sujami Chidam sriyam kuruham Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Sarvatata gadra vadra Bani mutra vadra bawa Maha samaya sapa Aham pe. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dhiro me bawa Suto kayo me bawa Supo kayo me bawa Anarata me bawa Sarva siddhi me prayacha Koma sutra me Chidam sriyam kuruham Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Sarva tata gadra vadra Mami mucha vadra bawa Mahasamaya sava ahum pe. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dhiro me bawa Suto kayo me bawa Supo kayo me bawa Anarata me bawa Sarva siddhi me prayacha Koma sutra me Chidam sriyam kuruham Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Sarva tata gata vadra Mami mucha vadra bawa Mahasamaya sava ahum pe. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya no palaya, paro safati no patita, diro me bawa, sutokayo me bawa, supokayo me bawa, anarata me bawa, sawatiri me prayacha, sawakama suchami, sidam sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho, bhagawan, sawatata gadra vadra mami mucha vadra bawa, mahasamaya sava ahumpe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Tino Patita Tito Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Supokayo Me Bawa Anarato Me Bawa Sawasiri Me Prayacha Sawakama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahumpe Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Tvira Me Bawa Sutokaya Me Bawa Supokaya Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sarasiri Me Payacha Kama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahom Pe. Okay, now that's the seven times will purify the body. Now we're going to purify the speech with the next seven recitations. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Siro Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Subokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sarasiri Me Prayacha Kama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatada Gadra Bhadra Mame Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sabha Ahum Pe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Tito Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Supokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sawasiri Me Prayacha Kama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sab Hum Pe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Tito Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Supokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sawasiri Me Prayacha Kama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Tvira Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Supokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sarasiri Me Prayacha Sawakama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Dvira Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Subokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sawasiri Me Prayacha Kama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Tito Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Supokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sarasiri Me Prayacha Sawakama Sucha Me Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mami Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Dvira Me Bawa Sutokayo Me Bawa Subokayo Me Bawa Anarata Me Bawa Sarasiri Me Prayacha Sawakama Sucha Me Siyam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Bhadra Mani Mucha Bhadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe. And now the last seven recitations, it's like, again, like dark, our insides are completely filled with the darkness of ignorance, and as the light and nectar enter our body, instantly the darkness of ignorance is obliterated, and our mind is completely purified. Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dino Mebawa Sutokaya Mebawa Subokaya Mebawa Anarata Mebawa Sorasiri Mebrayacha Kama Sucha Me Chidam Sriyam Kuraham Ha 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 Ho Bhagawan Sawatata Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bawa Maha Samaya Sapa Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajra Safadino Patita Fiyo me bawa Sutokayo me bawa Subokayo me bawa Anarata me bawa Sawa Siri me prayacha Kama Sucha me Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 ho Bhagawan Sawa Tata Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bawa Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Tvijo Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Subokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Prayacha Sava Kama Sujami Siyam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Vira Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Prayacha Kama Sucha Me Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gadra Vana Mami Mucha Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dhiro Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Subokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Prayacha Kama Sucha Me Chedam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Tiro Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Subokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Prayacha Sava Kama Sucha Me Kriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gadra Bhama Mimucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dhiro me bhava, sutokayo me bhava, supokayo me bhava, anarata me bhava, sarva siddhi me prayacha, kama sucha me, siddham sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho, bhagavan, sarva tata gadra vajra mame, mucha vajra bhava, maha samaya, sava ahum pe. And now feel that your body and your speech and your mind have been completely purified of all your negativities and obscurations, all the negative karma that would cause, that would force us to see ourselves as suffering in the future, all the negative karma of body, speech and mind, completely obliterated, completely gone. And from the crown of our head, Vajrasapa says, Son of the race, your negativities, obscurations, broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified, and generate strong faith that they have been completely purified, just as Guru Vajrasapa has said. Before Guru Vajrasapa, This is crucial part of purification, is vowing not to do it again as much as possible. So, if you have your page, we can read this one together. On the bottom of page 16, it says, before Guru Vajrasattva, I vow never again to commit those negative actions from which I can easily abstain, and not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least a few seconds those negative actions from which I find it difficult to abstain. And now Guru Vajrasattva is extremely pleased with your pledge. And Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt into light and dissolve into you. And your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's holy body, speech, and mind. And you want to, you know, you really want to feel that something has shifted, that something has changed, that you really have purified your body, speech, and mind, have some faith that this practice has actually accomplished that. And now, on page 246, we'll read the dedication from Master Shantideva's. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creatures suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing and the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from the ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power. May people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, thank you for your showing up and your attention and participation. And your homework for this next week is to review, to the degree that you have, and the texts that were written all cover this, the three principles of the path, and then to do Vajrasattva practice every day, every night. Preferably before you go to bed, clear off your day. You know, bring to mind the things that you've done that you know were unskillful. And then if you can't think of anything, well, think, well, I did it in the past. I've done them all. I've killed, I've stolen, adultery, lying, slander, harsh. All the negativities that... And you can even think about the negativities that you know other beings are committing right now in this world. You know, like... You know, things that people are doing now, they're harming one another, harming others. You know, you can think, yeah, I want to purify those tendencies that I have within me. So use your imagination to do this practice. Very, very powerful practice. Very helpful for the mind. You'll sleep better. Okay, thank you.